Welcome into a fresh episode of Fireside Sports, presented by Oregon Sports News. I'm your host, Casey Mabbitt. I want to bring in my co-host, Garrett Thornton of OSN. He's a senior writer. He's been a podcast co-host with me the last few months, and we're very grateful for the time he puts in. You can also find his work on KGW, Comcast Sportsnet, Oregon Sports News. He's all over the place. He's a man about town. Garrett, how are you doing tonight? Thanks for coming on.
I'm doing really good. How are you doing, Casey?
Doing great. I'm not enjoying the over 100 degree temperature we've been fighting this week, but hopefully you're doing better than I am.
Yeah, I'm doing fine, but it's way too hot. I mean, we live here in Portland for the 85 degree sunny summer days, not the 105 degree sunny summer days. So hopefully we get back to that 85, 90 again here shortly so we can get back to enjoying summer.
Yeah, I'd let Las Vegas and L.A. and those other places in the desert somewhere keep the hundreds. You know, I'll take the 80s. I'll take the 75s. Those are fine by me.
Yeah, I lived in Phoenix for 2 years, and I saw 123. No human should ever live in those conditions. And so when it gets to 100 here, I start having nightmares of what it was like down there.
I can imagine. You know, it's probably why the Phoenix Suns can't play basketball. The Arizona State Sun Devils can't play because you're just roasting on something like that.
Well, I mean, the Coyotes, the hockey team, they're talking about moving. Now the Diamondbacks are talking about moving. It's too dang hot.
It really is. And, you know, luckily we're almost out of the woods. We got one more day of triple digit, and then we're back in the double digits. And hopefully by this time next week, we'll be back in the 80s where we belong. So let's talk about, you know, since we're talking about hot weather, let's get into some hot takes on some hot sports news. Football season is right around the corner, Garrett. This is the first Sunday in a long time where there's going to be real NFL football. Not real. I mean, it's preseason and it's not even real preseason. It's the Hall of Fame game. But this is the ticket to our destination of real NFL football, which happens next month. So getting these games out of the way is really important to that. How excited are you to see the NFL coming back?
I'm way excited. The last few weeks, it's kind of been hitting me, and I've been watching Pac-12 Network, like the old games, when they play the game in 60 minutes, and I've been on NFL Network watching like 40-year-old Super Bowls, and I've got that football itch, and I got to scratch it, and so I don't care who's playing in the game or who's not playing in the game. Preseason football is still football. And so tomorrow night, Thursday night's the Hall of Fame game, and my Cowboys get to go against the Cardinals. Most people won't recognize any of the names on the field, but it's still football, and it's that time of year, and I'm super excited.
Well, let's get into some NFL predictions then, because the season's right around the corner, and you and I have not made a Super Bowl prediction yet, so shame on us for holding off on that, but we wanted to wait till August and give you guys something to look forward to, so it might have been in the cards, maybe not, but let's start with the NFC West, and we have brought up that division before. I think we're in agreement on who's going to win that division, but I'll just throw it out there. The team to beat in the NFC West is going to be Seattle. I don't expect Arizona to get there, or Los Angeles, or San Francisco. I don't even expect those three to make the playoffs, let alone fight for the division crown. You agree or disagree with that?
Yeah, I mean, this is the easiest division to call. It's going to be the Seahawks, and I don't think it's going to be particularly close. I think it's going to be a couple game difference between the Seahawks and the Cardinals, and the Seahawks will be the team that makes the playoffs for the NFC West.
I agree there. And then if we move over to the NFC North, I'm picking my Green Bay Packers to make it to the playoffs and win the division crown. I think Detroit will give them more trouble than maybe people are expecting, but I don't expect anything big out of Chicago. And I really don't know what to make out of Minnesota. They've got so much talent on both sides of the ball, but they were just riddled by injuries the last couple years. Last year especially, but now they've got Bradford under center for a whole season. He's got some familiarity with that offense, and they're not switching coordinators the way they did last year when Norv Turner resigned a couple of games into the season. I think that they could challenge Green Bay as well, but I really think the Packers will come away with the NFC North.
Yeah, I totally agree with that, and I think this one will be closer than the NFC West, but I don't think it's going to be particularly close either. I think the Packers will win it. And then Detroit and Minnesota, they could be in the running for a wild card spot depending on how the season breaks.
Yeah, and we'll talk about some wild card teams because there's going to be two of them per conference. But as far as division winners, in the NFC South, I'm actually going to go with an audible, and I'm going to pick Tampa Bay to surprise a lot of folks and take the NFC South. I know they're going to have a ton of competition from Atlanta, who's going to be hungry to get back to the Super Bowl. But I'm not sure what that offense is capable of without Kyle Shanahan calling the plays. And then, obviously, the Saints and Panthers are going to be huge thorns in their side. But, again, not sure what they're capable of. They've all been really good in the last few years, but none of them have been consistent year to year. You know, there's nobody that's ever won the NFC South 2 years in a row going back, like, I think a decade. So I'm picking Tampa Bay. Probably not the favorite pick for a lot of people, but that's who I see winning this division.
Well, I mean, Tampa Bay's been the trendy pick. Jameis Winston is developing. It's his third year in the league, and he's got weapons all around him with Mike Evans and DeSean Jackson and O.J. Howard now, the rookie tight end. And I think Atlanta is too talented. I think that they win the division. I think they repeat and win the division. I don't think they sniff the Super Bowl, but I think that they do win the division. But I'm with you that this is a tough division. Each of these teams has to play the other teams two times, and the quarterback play in the NFC South is top notch. You've got Jameis Winston, Drew Brees, Cam Newton, and Matt Ryan all in the same division, and that's going to be some fun football to watch.
It really is. I'm excited to see it get underway soon. So moving over to the final division in the NFC, which is the one that I'm sure has your attention all year, the NFC East. I think we'll be in agreement here on which team's going to win it, but I'm going to pick Dallas Cowboys. They were so good last year, and I expect them to be even better this year. Doesn't mean they'll have the same record at 13-3. It doesn't even mean they'll be as statistically impressive, but I think from a talent standpoint, they'll be even better. And maybe the league will catch up with them in some ways and only have a 12-4 and 11-5 season. But they could do 13-3 again, but no one's expecting that, I hope. I do think the Giants will give them a little more fight than maybe people were expecting. I know that the Giants were the dark horse going into the playoffs last year and barely made it in. But this year, with adding Brandon Marshall and having a really good offense and a great defense, I think that's really going to propel them to the playoffs. But I don't know that they can beat Dallas for the division crown. Who are you taking in the East?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. The Giants are a talented team, and the Brandon Marshall addition raised some eyebrows. But in my opinion, it might have raised some eyebrows in the wrong way, because they added to a position that was already a strength. And that offensive line is still not very good. And so I think that they're going to be in contention. I think they're going to be a tough team to beat. Eli Manning and that team, they're there every year. But I'm with you. I think the Cowboys are built the right way. I think that they're going to run the ball a ton. They're going to control the clock like they did last year. That young defense might have some hiccups early in the season, but they're going to get it together. The Cowboys have a brutal schedule, but I do think that the Cowboys will win that division for the second year in a row, and we'll see what they do going into the playoffs.
So we're in agreement on three of the four division winners. We've only split on the South so far. But let's also talk wild card teams. I'm going to put Minnesota in as the sixth seed. And then number five, I'm going to give to Atlanta. I assume you've got a different slate there because you've got Atlanta winning the South. So who do you have as a wild card team?
I'm going to go with Tampa Bay as a wild card team, and then the Giants as a wild card team. I think that the Giants will be in that 11 or 12 win range, 10 or 11 wins, but they're going to miss out when the Cowboys win the division. And then Tampa Bay, they'll be in that 10 win range, and I think that they're going to make some noise, but I still think Atlanta's the better team down south.
All right, well, let's switch gears over to the AFC. We'll start the AFC West. I'm going to go ahead and just go out on a limb here and pick the Oakland Raiders to win that division. They certainly looked like a Super Bowl contender last season before Derek Carr fractured his fibula. He's back and healthy now. They've got Marshawn Lynch coming in. We'll see what he can do. He's been out of football for a year, but if he's got some fresh legs, that could be really great behind that offensive line. Then they signed Jared Cook at tight end. And they've also got a pretty good defense to boot. Not a great defense, but above average. So I think that they'll be able to handle Denver, Kansas City, and San Diego. What do you see coming out of that division?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the Raiders, and I think a lot of analysts are kind of overthinking this division. The Chiefs are a decent team, but we're still not sure who their running back's going to be. Alex Smith is towards the end of his tenure. When do they give it over to Mahomes? Like, Denver, their defense is getting older, and that's what carries that team. Their quarterback situation's still in the air. The Chargers, it seems like a new Chargers hurt every day. I think if Derek Carr can stay healthy through the season, and I think the Raiders will walk away with that division this season.
All right, and then moving over to the AFC North, you've got Pittsburgh, Baltimore, Cleveland, and Cincinnati. To me, that's a no-brainer that Pittsburgh's going to win that one, but I'll turn it over to you and see if you've got a different thought there.
Nope, I totally agree with you. I think that trio of Roethlisberger, Bell, and Brown is too good on that offense, and there's just no defense in that division that can stand up to them at all.
100% agree. I think Cincinnati's on their way, but Baltimore's taking some steps back, and Cleveland is, you know, Cleveland, so...
But, I mean, that's the problem with Cincinnati. How long have we been saying that Cincinnati's on the way?
About 5 years now.
Yeah, so I've started to lose any hope in that. It's Pittsburgh's division to lose. I don't think that one will be too tough for them.
Agreed. And then in the AFC South, we got kind of a weird one. So you have Houston, who's the defending champs, and you have Indy, who returns Andrew Luck. And Tennessee, who has a healthy Marcus Mariota and a slew of weapons, an improved defense. And then Jacksonville, who aside from Blake Bortles, got pretty good around the ball on both sides. But they still got tons of question marks at quarterback. And now offensive line is a question mark with Brandon Albert retiring and a rookie taking over at left tackle. You do have Leonard Fournette coming in, but I don't know that'll be enough to jumpstart that offense. Defense looks pretty good. You've got superstars around the whole ball, but... I don't know if it's going to be enough to take down Tennessee or Houston or Indianapolis. I'm going to go out and say Tennessee is going to win that division. I think it's going to be really tough. I think it's going to be a three-way fight between them, Houston, and Indianapolis. But I think Jacksonville is going to be in the rearview mirror like they usually are, and you'll see Tennessee coming away with the title.
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm not as intrigued in this division as I am maybe the NFC South or the NFC East, where those are tight divisions, but those are divisions that a team's going to win 10 or 11 games to win the division.
Right.
I can see an 8-win team winning this division.
Sure.
Like this division is not great. Tennessee is getting better. The Colts have one of the best quarterbacks in football. Like, there is some talent in this division, but it's just not a good division. I mean,
and there's no Tennessee, complete team throughout. None of these teams are going to be Super Bowl contenders.
There's major holes in every one of these teams, and I can't see any one of these teams competing for a Super Bowl. Where in most of the other divisions in football, you can see a team legitimately competing for a Super Bowl. This is not one of them. I do think Marcus Mariota takes the next step forward. They've got weapons all around him. They came into the offseason saying, who are our wide receivers going to be? Well, now they've got Corey Decker, Eric Decker, Corey Davis, they've got weapons. And so I think that Tennessee team wins the AFC South, but I think they only do it winning 8 or 9 games.
Agreed. All right, and then the AFC East, you've got the Patriots, the Dolphins, the Bills, and who am I blanking on?
Patriots, Dolphins, Bills, and Jets.
Jets, there we go. You know, the Jets are so forgettable. I'm glad you remembered them, but... I forget about them every year. This year is even worse. I don't know that we need to bring them up, but...
At this point, the Jets are trying to get one of those top quarterbacks in the draft
right.
Next year. Like, the Jets will win one or two games this year. That's it. Like, they're not even trying.
They're Look tanking the so bad.
What they've done this offseason, they're not even trying to compete this year.
They're tanking so bad, they don't even make the list of eligible teams of my chart. You know, that's how bad it is. There's only 31 teams in the NFL anymore that are playoff eligible. So obviously the Patriots win this one, but do you see it being even close? Can Miami or Buffalo make a fight out of it, or is this one that Tom Brady and company run away with?
No, it's not close. The Patriots won the Super Bowl, and then they got better this offseason yep. by adding Brandon Cooks and Stephon Gilmore and some of the other pieces on that defense, it's not close. The Patriots win 15 or 16 games in the regular season and coast into the postseason.
And then on the playoff side, who do you see coming in as a wild card for your two teams in the AFC?
If I had to pick two teams, I'd probably say that Cincinnati will be one of those teams out of the AFC North. And then I wouldn't be shocked if maybe the Buffalo Bills made their way in as a wild card or the Kansas City Chiefs. But I don't. If I had to flip a coin, I'd probably say Chiefs because I think they have the better coach. But the Bills or the Chiefs will fight for that sixth playoff spot.
I think the Chiefs are definitely a playoff team, and I'm actually going to go the other way in the East. I'm going to say Miami makes the leap forward this year. They were pretty close the last couple of years. This year, I think they get a winning record and make the postseason. I don't think they do anything with it. I don't know that anybody can in the AFC, but I don't expect to see Houston or Jacksonville or Indy make it. And in the West, I think Denver is a rebuilding project that doesn't want to be labeled that way. And San Diego is just so injury-prone, and they've even gotten injuries this week. It just looks so bad. Cincinnati absolutely could do it, and so could Baltimore, and definitely Buffalo. If they've got a healthy Sammy Watkins and Tyrod Taylor plays lights out in a contract year, I could see them doing a lot of really good things in the regular season. I would just, you know, for my money, I'm going to bet on the Chiefs because they're so consistent and so good. And then the other team is going to have to be the Dolphins because I just want to see them make it. I don't know that they actually will, but wouldn't it be neat to see them make it for the first time in a long time?
Yeah, I mean, the thing with the Dolphins, so much of it relies on Jay Ajayi. He's going to be a big part of their offense, and he's been so injury-prone in the past that they've just got to keep him upright. And I could see him making the playoffs. It's a it's a possibility, but they got to keep him up.
Absolutely, and he's going through concussion protocol right now after getting his bell rung in training camp, so to your point, injury prone, so we'll see what he can do. Would be really neat to see them make the playoffs, though.
Well, and the reports back to college with Ajayi was basically that he has Brandon Roy knees, that his knees are beyond repair and that they're going to continually get worse. And so at what point can Ajayi just not play football anymore? So I know he's young. It's only his third year in the league, and last year was really his breakout year, but like, at what point is Ajayi has to hang it up? Like, Brandon Roy had to retire so early because of those knees that just had those chronic issues. And
right,
this guy could be right behind him.
Absolutely. All right, we got to speed things up because we're coming up on our break. So who are you picking to go to the Super Bowl in the NFC?
In the NFC, I'm going to have to go with the Cowboys just because I'm a Cowboy fan, but also I just believe that team is built like a Super Bowl team. I think that if they're going to do it, that their time is the next couple years while they've still got Ezekiel Elliott and Dak Prescott on their rookie deals, because that's when they can put the other players around them. That's when they can keep the best offensive line in football protecting those two. When they have to renew those guys, they're going to have to make some sacrifices. It's kind of like the Seahawks when Russell Wilson was on his deal. They fell off when they had to renew Wilson. And so the Cowboys are facing the same deadline. They've got three more years with these guys on these deals. And so got to make something happen the next couple years. And I think this is the year that the Cowboys can make the Super Bowl. And then the AFC, it's the Patriots. They'll make it there. I would bet pretty good money that the Patriots will make the Super Bowl in the AFC.
I'm gonna agree with you on the Patriots in the AFC. I don't think there's any team on their level in that conference. Not that there is necessarily in the whole league, but we'll kind of see how that goes when we get there. But on the NFC side, I'm actually going to go the other way and pick Green Bay. Not necessarily because I'm a homer. I mean, I do want to see them go. But I also think they did enough to fix their defensive issues that they'll be good enough that they can score more or at least as much as any offense in the league, except for New England maybe. And then on defense, they've got Kevin King, who I expect to contribute right away. They've got some really good secondary members. Their linebacking core is back and healthy. They've got a really good defensive line. And Ty Montgomery is going to be locked in at the running back position from day one. They've got Devontae Adams, who had the light bulb switch on about midway through the season, and now he's definitely ready to contribute as Jordy Nelson's air on the other side of the field, and you've got Randall Cobb. You have all these weapons, and you've got Aaron Rodgers, who's just dying to get back to the Super Bowl, and it'd be really, really neat to see him do it, but also to go against Tom Brady and see what those two can do against each other. I haven't seen Green Bay host two playoff games in a row while Aaron Rodgers has been the quarterback. They've been the, you know, they've been in a position to host one game each year, but they haven't ever hosted back-to-back, so I'm really hoping that this year they can get the top seed and have home field advantage throughout, because they've talked and talked about how important that is and how hard it is to win on the road in the playoffs, and they still did a really good job last year, but it just, it's not something you can really keep up with. It's going to get the better of you after enough time.
No, I mean, and that would be a fun matchup. I mean, it's two of the premier quarterbacks in the league, Rodgers and Brady, and that'd be a fun matchup for the league, and it's pretty marketable. I think the NFL would be pretty happy to have that matchup at the end of the year.
Absolutely. Well, with that, we'll go into our break and hear some messages from our sponsors. Garrett, thank you so much for being on, and we'll bring you back afterwards for some fantasy football talk, and we'll get some predictions on who Garrett thinks you should target at the different positions, like running back, wide receiver, quarterback, maybe even a couple sleepers. We'll be back with that. You're listening to Fireside Sports on Oregon Sports News.
It was a grand, exciting treat, a perfect joy to look at, and when it comes to taste, well, there's simply nothing finer. Jell-O adds a glamorous touch to any meal. Gay, sprightly colors, rich, tantalizing flavor, all blended together in a bright, tangy dessert of enticing goodness. So tomorrow night, lend new delight to dinner with a clear, radiant mold of shimmering Jell-O in any one of Jell-O's six delicious flavors. The name Jell-O is a trademark, the property of General Foods. And when you buy, look for those big red letters on the box. That way, you can always be sure of getting the flavor that made Jell-O famous.
Meanwhile, I'd like to ask...
To make every day more enjoyable, treat yourself often to refreshing, delicious Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. Here's a taste treat you can enjoy indoors, outdoors, at work, or at play. The cool, long-lasting mint flavor refreshes you. The smooth, steady chewing helps keep you fresh and alert. Adds enjoyment to whatever you're doing. Wrigley's Spearmint Chewing Gum. Refreshing. Delicious.
Proven in over 2 million homes. Second, you get both AM and FM radio with RCA Victor's new extended tone range. And third, the Rutland gives you two automatic record changers that enable you to enjoy records at all three speeds. Yes, enjoy all of these fine instruments in one fine combination at one money-saving price. Look over the Rutland soon. And say, here are two new RCA Victor Red Seal releases to add to your collection. September Song, sung on a single record by Ezio Pinza, and the album of selections from Gershwin's Porgy and Bess with Reza Stevens and Robert Merrill.
Welcome into the second half of Fireside Sports, presented by Oregon Sports News. I'm your host, Casey Mabbitt. I want to bring back my co-host, Garrett Thornton, and we want to talk a little fantasy football with you guys and give you some predictions on where we think some guys should go and where you should look for them, who's going to be a bust, who's going to be a sleeper, that sort of thing. We want to give you guys some help. You know, we're not the experts on the subject, but we do try really hard, and we both play a lot, so we definitely got something to offer. So, Garrett, let's start with the top pick in the draft. If you were drafting number one, who do you think is the guy that should be first off the board?
I think that it's David Johnson this year, the Arizona running back. There's less question marks about him than the other top running backs. You look at Le'Veon Bell, will he hold out? Will he be there week one? He's had some injury issues as well. Ezekiel Elliott, will he be suspended? Then the wide receivers. I love Antonio Brown. I have Antonio Brown in the keeper league. I've been riding with Antonio Brown the last few years. When Ben Roethlisberger's on the field, he's the best receiver in football. But without Ben Roethlisberger, he takes a nosedive. And we've seen that the last couple years when Roethlisberger's been hurt. And so I think it's David Johnson. I think that it's the safer pick. I think there's less question marks about him. And I think in that offense, they do so many things to get him the ball in the passing game and the run game. And I just, David Johnson would be my guy if I had the number one pick.
Well, then, you know, everybody's always looking for, you know, who's everybody overlooking. And I think in the top five, it's really hard to overlook guys. You know, you've got Le'Veon Bell, you've got David Johnson, you've got Ezekiel Elliott, you've got Antonio Brown. I mean, Julio Jones. These are guys that are studs that are going to compete week to week, and we know what they're capable of. But what's funny is you've also got LeSean McCoy, who's going as a top 10 pick, and he was definitely the biggest surprise of 2016. He had a huge season, and he wasn't supposed to have a big year after what he did in 2015. Can you see anybody taking him in the first couple picks, or do you think he's a late first-round guy at best?
I really like Melvin Gordon. I know that he wouldn't really be a surprise. He's a late first round, early second round guy in most drafts. And I think he's young. He's on a team that there's no Danny Woodhead like there has been the right last couple of years. It's Melvin Gordon's team. I think they're going to find ways to get him the ball. I don't know that he'll have the same amount of carries he did last year. He had 254 carries, which doesn't seem like a ton, but he only played 13 games. And so if Gordon can stay on the field for 16 games, I think he can pretty easily be a top five running back in fantasy.
Yeah, he's definitely on my list. He's in my top five. You know, I've got Le'Veon Bell, David Johnson, Ezekiel Elliott, and then rounding out the five, I've got Leonard Fournette and Melvin Gordon. And I think if you target those first three somewhere in the first round, maybe in all five, I would probably target the first three in the top five. I don't know if you'll get them beyond that unless somebody makes a mistake. But you could definitely get a guy like Gordon or Fournette or LeSean McCoy in the end of the first round or early second round and still get a top flight running back without having to make a reach for somebody who you don't know is going to do very well. Who's a sleeper for you at the running back position that you think people need to keep an eye on?
I mean, it's tough when you look at these running backs. I've got a draft coming up in a week, a little over a week. And so I've been studying, trying to figure out what to do. I really like Ty Montgomery in Green Bay. He's in that 15 to 20 range, usually ranked as a running back.
Right.
I just think he's so talented. He's so athletic. And with his background as a receiver, they're going to find ways to get him the ball that other running backs don't do. I mean, I think Christian McCaffrey is kind of the example. People are talking about all the ways that Carolina could get him the ball and all the passing routes that he can run out of the backfield. And there's all these videos on Twitter of him juking out Luke Kuechly and all, like, but Ty Montgomery is maybe not as dynamic as Christian McCaffrey, but he's also been in the league a few years. He knows how things go. He knows the offense. And so Christian McCaffrey's going in front of Ty Montgomery in most drafts, most leagues. I would take Ty Montgomery over Christian McCaffrey because I think it's his job. And I just, in that offense with that passing attack, being able to be the dump off or the third and one, get us a yard. I just think Ty Montgomery is going to have a big role there in Green Bay this year.
I would agree with you there. The other guy I've been looking at who's going a little bit later in like the fifth or sixth round is Mike Gillisley from New England. He's going in to replace LeGarrette Blount, who's now in Philadelphia. And Blount's actually another guy that people are overlooking who's going in the later rounds because they're not sure what to expect out of him or in that rotation at running back in Philadelphia. But you've got a guy who came over from Buffalo and was a touchdown machine there. He was a short yardage back, and they even pulled LeSean McCoy off the field quite a few times to give him the ball. Now he's going into an offense with Tom Brady and all the weapons we've discussed. I feel like that's a guy that you definitely want to target. I don't know if he'll be around in the, you know, eighth or ninth round, but definitely in the fifth and sixth or seventh. I think that he'll be there in the middle rounds where you can get a steal.
Well, my one word of caution with Gillisley in New England is that we have never been able to trust a New England back. Bill Belichick comes into each game with a brand new game plan, and if a running back had 100 yards and a couple touchdowns, there's a chance that he doesn't play the next week just because of the matchup.
Right.
And so, yes, LeGarrette Blount had over 1,000 yards and 18 touchdowns. He had an incredible season last year for New England, but any New England fantasy players on your team, you're taking the chance that they don't fit the matchup. They don't fit the game plan, and you're taking a chance that they could lay an egg. I like Gillislee. I like where he's going in the drafts, but I've also seen people reach for him in the third or fourth round thinking right. that he'll be a LeGarrette Blount clone in New England, and I'm not sure that I'm that high on him.
Yeah, for me, if you're taking a sleeper, they need to be in the mid to late rounds. You're trying to get a high round value out of a low round choice. So I definitely echo what Garrett said and preach caution to people listening to this, and don't think that we're saying target these guys early. We're saying keep them on your radar, and if there's a room for to get them and you've got a good spot, go for it, but don't reach for them. If you're drafting them 2-3 rounds early, probably you're missing out on some really good talent that you're going to be kicking yourself the rest of the year for. So let's move over to wide receiver. So we know Antonio Brown at the top in the game, and Julio Jones is right behind him. After that, what names are you looking for when you're trying to fill your first receiver spot? For me, I've got Odell Beckham Jr. on there. He can be inconsistent, but the guy is just a yard and touchdown machine when he's on. Same with Jordy Nelson and A.J. Green. They round out my top five. Those are guys that you could really draft them all in the first, second round, and you're not going to miss out on much. But who are the guys you look for, Garrett?
I mean, Mike Evans has to be somewhere in that top five conversation. He's so big. He's so talented. And I do think Jameis Winston's in for a real big increase over the last couple seasons. But also with Evans, there's more competition for touches with some of the other guys that they've brought in. So there will be some question marks with Evans. T.Y. Hilton will be a top 8 to 10 receiver if Andrew Luck is healthy, but that's a big if.
Right.
I'm interested in seeing what Brandon Cooks does in New England with Tom Brady. I don't think Brady's had a receiver quite like Cooks for a long time, if ever. And so I think adding that dimension to that New England offense could be dangerous. Now, I don't know if he's a third, fourth round guy. That's where he's going in a lot of drafts, but he's not in the top 7 or 10 conversation. I think he's just outside that range, but I am interested in seeing what he does. And then I think Michael Thomas in New Orleans.
I was just about to ask you about him.
I think he's going to take a big step forward without Cooks there. I think he's the legitimate number one threat in that pass game, and obviously Drew Brees has made some good receivers look great and some average receivers look good, and so I think Brees is going to turn Michael Thomas into a pretty dynamic fantasy wide receiver.
What do you make of a guy like Allen Robinson, who was on a lot of draft boards high in the second or third round the last couple of years, and now he's taking a couple steps back with, you know, the quarterback situation being what it is? Is he someone you target in the middle rounds as a sleeper, or is he a guy you would look at in the third or fourth round and say, that's a guy I'm going to look at for my wide receiver one?
Yeah, I mean, Allen Robinson, and for me, DeAndre Hopkins is in that same conversation. He was a round one type guy last year, and he got in with a bad quarterback in Osweiler, and so I think both those guys will take steps forward, and it just depends on where they're at in the draft. Right now, Matthew Berry at ESPN, his rankings, he has Allen Robinson at 20th wide receiver and DeAndre Hopkins is the 22nd. And so that's pretty good value down there. I like 20, 21, and 22, because 21 Sammy Watkins.
Yep.
And so if I could get Allen Robinson, Sammy Watkins, or DeAndre Hopkins in the 4th, 5th, 6th round, I'd be pretty happy, because I figure if I'm drafting a receiver and two running backs in the first three rounds, I'd be happy to have one of those guys as my wide receiver number two in the 4th round.
Absolutely.
Even better if I can snag one of them in the 5th round. So I do think that there's value there. I don't think the quarterback play in Houston can be as bad as it was last year. So I think DeAndre Hopkins takes a step forward. I think Sammy Watkins has the best chance of being healthy this year as he has his whole career. And then Allen Robinson, I think with the dimension of Leonard Fournette out of the backfield, I think it's going to open some things up in the passing game for Bortles and Robinson. And so, yeah, I mean, those are some of the guys that I keep an eye on heading into the drafts and circle those and just highlight their names on my draft board, because I don't think you win the draft at the top of the draft. It's the middle of the draft where you win the league.
Absolutely.
And so if in that fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh round, I can grab a couple guys like that and they can play up to their potential, then absolutely I'd grab one of those guys.
Well, and the wide receiver position is maybe deeper than it's ever been, where they're talking about guys like Alshon Jeffery and Doug Baldwin as sleepers, where those are guys that are capable of being wide receiver ones on any given Sunday and have put up really good fantasy numbers the last few years. But Jeffery's had health concerns and he's in a new offense. And then you've got Baldwin, who no one really knows what to make of. I mean, when he's angry Doug Baldwin, he's amazing. When he's not angry Doug Baldwin, you really don't know what to expect. He might be worth 3 catches for 20 yards. But if you can get one of those guys in the 6th or 7th round or beyond, you could have a stacked roster with some really good talent on it. I mean, that would open it up for you to go after a guy like a Rob Gronkowski or a Greg Olsen or a Jimmy Graham at tight end and not feel like you're taking that pick too high.
Well, and one thing on the receivers while we're on this subject, on the same Matthew Berry rankings, if this is a footnote, if you're in any of my fantasy leagues, turn it off now. One, I just do not understand. Kelvin Benjamin is ranked as the number 40 wide receiver.
Well, I know he showed up to camp overweight and he didn't have a great year last year.
I've done a few mock drafts and he'll get drafted in the 8th, 9th, 10th round. Kelvin Benjamin is the number one receiver in
Carolina.
Like, it's not close. And Greg Olsen's getting older, and that running back core is going to be interesting, but they're going to take some time to figure out. So if I can grab Kelvin Benjamin as my wide receiver 3 in the 9th or 10th round, I can stack up on running backs earlier in the draft, on a quarterback, and I don't understand that. And I, now that I said this on a podcast that gets posted tomorrow, he'll go in the 3rd round of my draft next week and I'll miss out. But
yep.
I just don't understand that ranking at all. I think that he's going to have a big season. It might not be a top 10 season, but there's no way that at the end of the season we're looking at Kelvin Benjamin as the 40th best receiver in the league.
Absolutely not. And, you know, there's so much talent to go around in wide receivers. And you got guys like Dez Bryant going in the middle rounds. He's usually a top five pick in a lot of fantasy draft. Not top five, but top five at his position. And Devontae Adams out of Green Bay, who had a great year last year, he's going in the 6th or 7th round. You have Alshon Jeffery going 6th or 7th. You got these guys that would usually be high on the board. You know, DeAndre Hopkins deserves to be a top five at his position, but because of his quarterback play last year, he's way down the list. It is what it is, and guys are going to go later than they ought to. And Benjamin absolutely should have a killer year. He showed up to training camp overweight, and I think that's got some people concerned in addition to some conditioning issues last year. But if he gets in shape, he's absolutely their target monster. Larry Fitzgerald is another guy who just plays lights out every year, but he's always an afterthought in the draft. And he's playing in the slot now because he's up there in years, but he consistently puts together 1,000-yard, 10-touchdown seasons. So look for him out there. He's another potential sleeper. You got a lot of options out there. It's really hard to draft poorly on wide receiver unless you just sleep on it.
Well, and it all really depends on how your league is scored. I mean, if it's a full-point PPR league, you're going after guys like Jarvis Landry and Keenan Allen and a lot of the other names that we didn't even talk about as the best receivers in fantasy, because those guys, they can get 13 catches on any given Sunday.
Absolutely.
But a lot of these other top receivers, they rely on touchdowns, they rely on the deep ball, where it changes the game if you're going after Julian Edelman in the 2nd or 3rd round in a full-point PPR league. Like, it's just completely different. And so when people – I've asked people, how's your league scored? When they don't know, that's really concerning to me.
Yep.
Because it matters. Like, you can't go into a draft not knowing how your league is scored. That's one of the single most important things going into the draft. And so my one word of advice to everybody out there tonight is find out how your league is scored. Is it scored PPR, point per reception? Do your quarterbacks passing touchdowns count as 6 points or as 4 points? Like, how much are field goals worth? Because that can make a big difference. Oh, yeah. And so just make sure you know how your league scored and then build your draft around that. Because if it's PPR and you're going off of a standard cheat sheet and you draft four ground and pound running backs in the first six rounds, you're going to lose the league. But if it's standard and you draft Jarvis Landry in the third round, you're going to lose that league. Like, just focus on the way that it scored and go from there. But I do think that this year the wide receiver position is super deep. And so in all of my leagues, I'm definitely focusing on running backs early in the draft, but then coming back to receivers in that like fourth through seventh round, because I think there's a ton of value there.
All right, well, we got to get going. We're way past the 30-minute mark, working on the 40-minute mark. Garrett,
I think we do that every week.
We do. It's our tradition, but we always say we're going to try to get them out in 30 minutes. We never do, but that's our thing. You know, we're liars here. So who are your top five quarterbacks to target? Not in any specific order, just who are the top five guys you're going to target in your draft?
Okay, so I know we're over, but I have a little tangent here.
Go ahead.
Another point of advice. I am not drafting quarterbacks early this year.
You absolutely should not. They're so deep.
Top five quarterbacks last year for 2016 standard scoring fantasy football were Aaron Rodgers, Matt Ryan, Drew Brees, Andrew Luck, and Kirk Cousins. That was their total points throughout the year. And then if you look at number six, which was Dak Prescott, and number 15, which was Andy Dalton, the difference was 22 points.
Yep.
And so if you divide that out over 16 games, it's barely over a point difference a game between 6 and 15. And so I'm fine with any of the 6 through 15 starting as my quarterback. If I have to switch it up a few weeks into the season, I have to switch it up. But I'm not all too concerned about quarterback. I would love to have an Aaron Rodgers, a Matt Ryan, a Tom Brady, a Drew Brees. I'd love to have one of those top quarterbacks on my team, but I'd much rather have running back depth or wide receiver depth or a starting tight end, because those positions are much harder to replace and there's a much bigger difference in point potential from the top tier guys and the bottom tier guys. Whereas the quarterback position, you could pick number 6 through number 20 and have basically the same production over a 16-week season. So, yes, my top quarterbacks are just those stereotypical Rodgers, Ryan, Brees, Brady. Those guys are going to be very good. But after that, I'd be happy with Derek Carr. I'd be happy with Kirk Cousins, Dak Prescott, Jameis Winston. All those guys are going to have big seasons. And I think that it's not going to be too huge of a difference between that top tier and that next tier of quarterbacks.
And I'll echo that sentiment. You know, for me, I usually don't even start looking for quarterbacks until I have at least four running backs and at least three receivers. So I'm not even looking until round eight. And that's when I'm just kind of seeing what's on there. I mean, Matt Ryan's going late in the draft this year. So is Roethlisberger. So is Brees. I wouldn't even look for guys until about seven or eight. And even after that, you can get a guy like Phillip Rivers. You can get a guy like Jameis Winston. They're going to be around. And you're going to get such good depth if you take running backs or receivers before you start looking for a quarterback. The bulk of your points are going to be from your top three or four rounds every week, but you're shooting for about 100 points a week, give or take. So if you're looking for that and you know a quarterback like Eli Manning is going to score 25, 30 points a game, you don't need to go for Aaron Rodgers going to score 40 if you can make sure that your running backs and receivers are getting that differential for you.
And it all goes back to just knowing what kind of league you're in. This all changes if it's a two-quarterback league.
Absolutely.
Because in two-quarterback leagues, yes, quarterbacks go much earlier. There's a four, five, six, seven quarterbacks that go in the first round of the draft in a two-quarterback league. And so just be aware what your league, how it is, how many players of each position. I'm in a two-quarterback league, and I will have my two quarterbacks wrapped up and on my team within the first five rounds. It's that important. You have to have two quarterbacks on the field, and there's only a certain amount of them in the league.
Right.
But in most leagues, when it's not two quarterback, I probably won't look at quarterbacks in the first 10 rounds just because I think that there's so much depth at wide receiver, and I'm trying to build my team with running back potential that I can find a Derek Carr in round 11. I can find Russell Wilson Marcus Mariota, around 9 or 10. I can find those guys later in the draft.
Absolutely. All right, well, we got to get going, but Garrett, thank you so much for coming on. We'll have to do another one of these after we have our drafts and kind of go over what we got, what we didn't get, what we're hoping to see out of our teams. Thank you for coming on and sharing your thoughts. We'll definitely need to keep a copy of this for the rest of the season, see where our predictions went on not just fantasy, but also the real football game. And I know you are, but I am so excited for football. I can't wait for it to get here. So really looking forward to the Hall of Fame game just to make sure it kicks off right. And then after that, we're into preseason and NFL football is right around the corner.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to wake up tomorrow. I'm going to have a little bit of a pimp in my step when I go to work. I'm going to be ready because it's Hall of Fame game, and I don't care how boring a game it is. I don't care who's playing quarterback for whatever side. I'm just excited that football season's here, and I've got a draft in a week, so life's pretty good right now.
Absolutely. Well, we'll catch up with you next week or the week after, and we'll fill in the people on how our fantasy drafts are going, how NFL preseason's going, who are the teams to beat in the first quarter of the season. We'll get into all that in the next episode. But, Garrett, thanks again. This has been Fireside Sports, presented by Oregon Sports News. I'm your host, Casey Mabbitt. He's Garrett Thornton. Make sure you catch us on Twitter. He's at Portland Garrett, and this show is at Fireside OSN. So check us out, and we'll like you back if you follow us. So thank you guys for paying attention to our show, and hopefully we helped you out, and good luck in your drafts. Thank you, and good night.